Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
What is the surprising thing leaders should stop doing? Hello, everyone. Kevin Cruz here. Today, we're going to learn how we can become better leaders by giving up control. But first, I want to encourage you to subscribe to our newsletter at leadx.org. Each issue has actionable tips you can try right away to advance your career and fulfill your potential. Visit leadx.org. Now, we are very honored to have today's guest. He served in the U.S. Submarine Force for 28 years. He was assigned command of the nuclear submarine USS Santa Fe, which at the time was suffering from low morale, low performance, and low crew retention. By rejecting the classic leader-follower model, our guest transformed the performance of the Santa Fe from the worst in the fleet to the best in the fleet. He is the author of Turn the Ship Around. Our guest is David Marquette. Welcome, David.
Hey, welcome, Kevin. Great to be on the show.
Thanks for joining us. So, David, we're going to talk about Turn the Ship Around in just a minute, but I want to start by asking a couple of questions that our listeners are always curious about. And the first is, this whole notion of work-life balance. I mean, what do you think about it, and do you have any tips for achieving it?
Yeah, by some counts, I'm a bad person to ask that because my wife would say I have no work-life balance. but a more hopeful answer was this. I don't think work-life balance really has anything to do with how much time you spend engaging with your work. It has to do with how you feel about the work that you're doing. If you love what you're doing and you think you're helping people, you have a team that matters, you feel part of something bigger than yourself, then there's no stress. And people in those environments don't ask about work-life balance. It's the people who don't like their jobs and their jobs are stressing them out and their bosses are pissing them off. Those are the people who struggle with work-life balance. And I'm telling you, even if you only went to work for 10 minutes a day, you'd still be out of balance. So it's not about the time you spend. It's about how you feel about your job.
Yeah, I think this in this world we live in, it's if anything, we can hope for a good work-life blend. But in all the research I've seen, I don't really see correlation between that work-life balance and employee engagement or other factors. So it makes a lot of sense.
Right.
So, David, tell us about a time in your career where you know you actually failed as a leader. And what did you learn from it?
Yeah, I thought I was a good leader. I thought I had this thing all locked up when I got selected to be a submarine captain. It was likely to be the pinnacle of my Navy career. And I thought leadership was all about telling people what to do and getting them to do it. I was pretty good at that. I was all prepped up to go to one submarine. The very last minute, I got shifted to a different one, one I had, trained up for. And so I step aboard the confident, good-looking, submarine captain, and I start telling my guys what to do. And almost immediately, I gave them an order, which, unbeknownst to me, couldn't be done on the submarine. But you know the shocking thing? They actually tried to do it.
Even though they knew it couldn't be done.
even though. And I asked them afterwards when it came out, well, we can't actually do this. Basically, it was like saying, shift into fifth gear for a car that had four gears. I mean, so nothing really bad happened, but it was just kind of embarrassing. And then I went to the officer who'd been on board over 2 years. It was one of the senior officers on board. I'd been there for 2 weeks. I had no prep time. And he had been there for 2 years. I said, hey, did you know this? He said, yes, sir, I did. And he kind of gave me this silly smile. I'm like, what the heck, man? And I said, why? And he said, yeah, and everybody knows why. Because it's what you told me to do. And this really rocked me back on my heels. And I realized that all my training about leadership was about getting people to do what they were told. And that was not what I needed in this situation. What I needed was for people to think. And I needed to figure out how to get people thinking. Now, my instinct was to say, well, we got our guys together. My instinct was to give them a lecture. Well, you guys need to be proactive. You need to speak up. If you don't agree with me, you gotta step into the breach and you gotta man up and tell me. And that's not the way it works. Mm. Finally, it came reflected back to me. So, well, actually, I can only control myself. And what can I do? The thing that I can do is stop telling them what to do. And that, and in other words, as I lean back and give them the space, they can lean forward. And we came up with a phrase with And the phrase is very simple. It's I intend to. And we said, look, don't ask questions. Don't come to me with a problem without a solution. Come to me and you can describe problems, but then say at the end, and here's what I intend to do. I intend to submerge the ship, start up the reactor, load a torpedo. And this was unbelievably successful.
And I've heard this referred to intent-based leadership, but it really boils down to those three words. And language is important because they're using the words or not, so you know whether they're sort of getting it or buying into it or not. But how did you roll that out, you know, throughout the sub? I mean, this idea that, hey, don't be waiting for commands anymore. You let me know, or you let your superior know what you intend to do. How did you train them in that?
Well, the submarine I took over was doing very poorly, and their mindset was to avoid making mistakes, which of course biases you towards avoiding making decisions. Mm-hmm. And so I was really worried that nothing was going to happen. But a few people picked it up right away, and they were like, this is awesome. And so I sort of, you know, I responded to them. I encouraged them. A lot of what happens on the submarine happens in a public environment. You're in the control room, for example. So all these people are watching me interact with the few senior officers that are really getting it. And when someone would come up to me and would say, Captain, I request permission to submerge the ship, for example, I wouldn't give them a lecture about, well, you know, here we say I intend to. I would just ignore them. It was very awkward. Mm. I was just not even paying attention to them. Finally, some, you know, junior enlisted guy would say, hey, Lieutenant, try saying I intend to. And then they go, oh, yeah, I intend to. And I kind of come alive like, you know, a puppet coming to life and say, yes, okay, great. And one of the benefits of a submarine is you can't get away, right? You're there 24 hours a day. We're all confined within really a couple hundred feet of each other, 135 people. And so it's a very closely coupled system. And so things cascade. And so within a very short period of time, it cascaded from me to the officers, to the chiefs, and down to the enlisted guys. And what we saw was really interesting because a junior enlisted man, and I personally knew the bottom of the hierarchy, normally would be sort of a tell me what to do kind of role. But here, even those guys were coming up and saying, hey, here's the situation. Here's why this is the right thing to do. Here's what I intend to do. And it really turned, you know, when I got to the submarine, I described it as one leader and 134 followers, one thinker and 134 doers. And we really turned into 135 thinking people. And that's really the key, I think, to engagement. It's very simple. We have all these like tricks to engage our people. I think it's very, very simple. Give your people the ability to make decisions. You can't be making decisions without being engaged. It engages your brain. So
it's that, autonomy trigger exactly. for engagement. So right. Let's go back. Now let's pretend the I intend to was in place already. Everyone's familiar with it. Back when you gave, you know, the mistaken two-thirds emergency propulsion order. Now, is it that you would have said, hey, I intend to go up, you know, EPM two-thirds, and they would have said, well, you might intend to, but it ain't going to happen. Or, you know, they challenge you back. Or is it that you wouldn't have been the guy to say it at all? You're there, and they are saying, hey, we intend to advance, and they wouldn't have said two-thirds because they knew it didn't have that ability.
Right. So it's a contract, right? The leader says, look, here's the deal. I'm going to stop giving you instructions. I'm going to stop micromanage you. But I am going to give you our intent. I'm going to lay out clearly what our intentions are, what our purpose is, okay. What our why is, what we're trying to do. Okay. So, and the team says, okay, I got that. And for my part, I'm going to stop asking for permission. I'm going to tell you how we intend to achieve what we're trying to achieve. So in other words, in this situation, my goal was to stress the team. Mm-hmm. My goal was to make it harder. We were running an exercise with the reactor shutdown, and my goal was to make it harder for the engineers and to add stress to the activity. And so what I should have said in this intent-based environment was, hey, I want you to stress the team. Do something that will stress the team right. and make it harder for them. And then let, in this case, the officer of the deck would have come back and said, okay, well, I intend to, you know, maybe tell them that some ship is bearing down on us and we really need propulsion quickly, or something like, you know, right. just, you know, something that creates a mental stress, something that's actually physically possible right, to do, right. as opposed to like my knucklehead approach was, well, I'm, you know, let's speed up. Had it been possible, it would have had the effect, but rather than just say, here's what I really want you to tend to achieve, I was down micromanaging the details.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, hopefully the listeners don't think I'm, you know, berating the point or the case, but I think there's a lot here because, you know, there's different levels of how you could have expressed your goal, all of which would be better than, I mean, you didn't physically have your hand on the controls, but you practically did with that first order. So whether you just say, hey, our goal is to let's crank up the stress of this simulation. That's one way to talk about your intended outcome. Or you could have said more specifically, hey, let's accelerate the drain on the battery. Right. That's still, now that's more of a micro goal than the bigger level goal, but that's still not telling them specifically like they're robots to, you know, just go up to a 2/3, which didn't exist. So, you know, right. I'm hoping our listeners really take that away. And, you know, I suffer from this, David. I'm sure, you know, it's a common challenge because we're all moving so fast that as leaders, we know very often we can solve the problem faster than our team can. We often do know what the right answer is. It is easier to just fix it ourselves, but that's a short-term fix that could get us in trouble down the road, right?
Exactly. So that's the tension because we got to get it done. It's always easier. You're going to see because as a leader, you will see the problem first, most likely. You will see the solution first, most likely. And you say, look, we can just keep moving. If I just give you guys the answer, you go off and do it. And the team sort of, you know, invites that. They're like, just tell us what we need to do right. here. And then, and so in intent-based leadership, we play what we call a know-all but tell-not leader. It's that moment when you see the answer and you say, you know what? I want you guys to go work on that for half an hour, 30, even if it's just 30 seconds. Think about that and then tell me what you intend to do. You'll learn a lot more. Oh, by the way, that's when they're doing their leadership push-ups. That's when they're building the ability to become leaders and they're building independence in the team so that a week, a month, a year from now, you don't know when, they're going to say, you know, we had a situation, we couldn't get a hold of you, but this is what we did. And you say, oh my gosh, that's amazing. And your team moves forward. There's a bias for action as opposed to, you know, most people are mired in this permission-based environment. Well, the boss didn't say yes yet, so, you know, it must be no.
See, this is you hit on a lot of pure gold right there. So first of all, again, you know, this know all, tell not, that is so powerful because, again, as leaders, we're often told explicitly or it's implied that we should be the expert. And in fact, a question I get is from new leaders who say, oh my gosh, I've taken over a team, but like I never did the jobs of the people that I'm leading. I'm in bad shape. And it's actually, we should stop trying to be the know-it-all, tell-it-all. It's good to know it, but we should hold back from telling those answers, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think knowing your job's important. For me, it took going into a position where I didn't know the details to really understand the power of not telling people what to do. Because the problem is when you're the expert, when you see everything faster, you know, for whatever reason, then you end up falling into this default mode where you're telling everybody what to do, which is permission for them to shut down their brains. Because they're like, oh, yeah, well, you know, John will tell us what to do. So, you know, why do I need to worry about it?
And David, I loved your phrase there about leadership push-ups, you know, instead of saying to some, you know, someone comes in with the problem. And how many of us with our open door policies, just again, because it's expedient, someone walks in with a problem, we tell them the solution and out they go. But it's as simple as what you said. Let them do some leadership push-ups. Say, hey, go away for 30 minutes and think about it, or come back in 30 minutes with three possible ideas or solutions, and then let's talk about it. And at least they go out and they get that workout in.
Exactly. And oh, by the way, how good does that feel? Oh, all day long, people come in my door and I tell them, I help them out. I solve their problems. I go home at the end of the day and I feel, man, did I do a good job today? But it's a psychological parasite, because what you're doing is you're making yourself feel good at the expense of your team.
Yeah, that's right. That's really powerful. Talk more then about the role of the leader, especially in, you know, critical situations like you're a commander of a sub. I mean, one role is, okay, leader is coach. I'm hearing that, you know, loud and clear. It's like, okay, let me coach you through this situation, this problem solving. What else is really the role then of the leader?
So I think the leader does a couple of really important things. First of all, if there's dissent on the purpose or the intent, the leader has to set the intent. They say, look, let's be clear. Here's what we're trying to do here. And we're not trying to do everything. This is the most important thing. Number two, the leader creates structure. The leader creates an environment so that it's easy for the people to participate. The idea is not to solve the problem. The idea is to create an environment where everybody's views and perspectives come out on the table, because that will result in the best problem solving by the team. Because the mindset is normally, I'm right, let me coach you to the correct answer, as opposed to, I'm going to learn along with you. Like, cancel teaching moment. Oh, let me take a teaching moment. That just pisses people off, right? So just say, so when someone comes to you, like a guy would come to me and say, yeah, the machine's starting to vibrate a lot. Our plan, I'm thinking, right, the plan is, hey, let's shut it down and change the oil, check the bearings or something. And he says, so we're just going to keep running it until it breaks. And in my head, I'm like, no, that's a boneheaded idea. But instead of saying, no, this is what you're going to do, I encourage leaders to say, yeah, tell me more, in a very sort of non-judgmental way. Not why do you want to do that, but, you know, hey, tell me more. Because you will learn something, even if what you learn is that your person doesn't have any idea about how machines
work. Right, right.
Hopefully that's not it. But they're closer to it. They're the ones standing on the deck plate, feeling the vibration in their shoes, looking into the client's eyes, whatever it happens to be. They're closer to the problem. They know something you don't know. And your job at that point is to make it easy for them to tell you what that is. And whether you end up shutting down the machine or not, at the end of the day, they feel like you listen to them, and then they're going to be more likely to share their thoughts, beliefs, and feelings in the future.
Another powerful three-word combination, tell me more, gets you so much more out of the action. And David, this is with just the few minutes we have, this has just kind of occurred to me. So what is your instinct when something does go bad? You know, bad things do happen. And you know, in the world of subs, I think back to the USS Greenville all the way back in 2001, you surfaced and collided with a Japanese fishing vessel. Your instincts, is it that there's leadership that, again, was giving orders and that weren't being challenged or set through? Or was it too much power was given and the top leadership didn't catch a decision that was made somewhere else in time? Like, what goes awry?
Yeah, so I think if you want a resilient system where errors don't get propagated through the system, you really need to create an environment where it's okay for people to tell you you're wrong. Mm. And we all know, like you see the thing with this Volkswagen, I happen to have one of those cars, and the FBI arrested one of the executives today. And it's Volkswagen is a very hierarchical, do what you're told corporate culture. And so the excuse is always, well, I was just doing what I was told. And it absolves people of responsibility. The Greenville accident happened to a classmate of mine while I was in command of the Santa Fe. And it was a classic case. Afterwards, a crew member said, you know, when the captain said it's all clear, I did have a doubt in my mind. Mm. And we had this trace on the sonar that ended up being the Ehime Maru, the fishing boat that they collided with and killed 9 people. But it didn't say anything. And that's the tragedy. It's because in this environment where the captains have to be right or the CEO is right, it suppresses that, you know, hey, are we sure about this?
Right.
And, you know, I'm seeing something that's different than what everybody else is talking about. And letting it be okay for people to say that, it is so powerful.
Yeah, that's it makes a lot of sense because I'm sure on a small level, I know you do a lot of work with hospitals, and that's the classic thing. You know, does the nurse feel empowered to challenge the doctor if the doctor forgot to wash her hands, you know, and things of that nature? So you need to create that safe environment.
Yeah, and let me just kind of go back to the setup for this whole thing, which is our instinct is to give our people a lecture. Oh, you know, you need to speak up. You need to, you know, it's okay here for people to express dissenting opinions, you know, and make that pronouncement. But if you don't practice it and you don't actually shut your mouth first and say, well, what do you guys, before you guys hear what I think, I want to hear what y'all think, and do things like that, it's just empty words and it doesn't work.
Makes sense. Now, David, before we wrap up, I like to challenge our listeners to try something new today. So what's something, you know, whether you're a leader of a five-person team or maybe you're even an individual contributor, what's something in this area of intent-based leadership that they could try?
I want you to practice giving up control in some small, small way. It doesn't need to be at work. Here's an example. Next time you go out to eat, tell the waiter, you pick my meal.
That's
I'm
great.
I'm allergic to peanuts. Yeah, but you pick my meal. But I want you to practice giving up control, whether it's driving the car, whether it's going to eat, whether it's the next time the project team leader comes in and talks to you about something. I want you to practice in one small way every day. Just give up a little bit of control and see how that feels. Because that's when you feel that feeling, that tinge of anxiety, you're on the right track to becoming a great leader.
I love that, and I'm literally going to try that exercise myself. And there's nothing that I'm allergic to, so it could be anything. David, what's the best way our listeners can find out more about you and your book?
Hey, we have a website, David Marquet, DavidMarquet.com, where we have some resources. The book's Turn the Ship Around. You get it on Amazon. And one thing we have that we've got a bunch of leaders participating in almost 20,000 is we have a weekly leadership nudge. We have a YouTube channel. You can also get it on Twitter. And these little nudges are little 75-second snippets, me talking about something very small and little bite-sized pieces. You don't need more training. You just need reminders.
Love it, the weekly nudge. All right, friends, you've just been mentored by Subcommander David Marquet. Check out his book on Amazon.com or your favorite bookstore. You can get the links he mentioned and show notes from this interview over at leadx.org. And listeners, I've got a favor to ask. If you've gotten even one new idea from this show, please take a minute. Just leave an honest one-sentence review up on iTunes, because the more reviews a podcast gets, the more likely iTunes will show it off to other people. Until next time, remember, you don't need a title to be a leader. It's not about power or authority. Leadership is about influence. How will you lead today?